Okay, I will call the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 8:35 a.m. on Wednesday, February 14th, 2024. I think it's Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's to everybody out there. Representative Josephson, we have presence. Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Kronk, Representative Cologne, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Before we start, just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. This morning, we have a busy schedule. We have four bills. We'll try to get to all four of them. We do have a hard stop at 10:10. And preferably if we could be done by 10, but a hard stop at 10:10 this morning. And first, we will take up House Bill 81, which is transfer of boat title upon a death. We had no amendments on that bill, so we'll just review fiscal notes. And if it's the will of the committee, then we'll move that bill out of House Finance. After that, we have House Bill 148. That is the Alaska Performance Scholarship Eligibility Bill. There were no amendments on that also. So we'll just be reviewing fiscal notes. And if it's the will of the committee, we will also move that bill out. Next, we'll have House Bill 193. That's the Internet for Schools, otherwise known as the BAG Bill. We do have two amendments for that bill. So we'll take up the amendments. And if it is the will of the committee, then we'll move that bill out. And finally, we have House Bill 155, which is Alaska Military Affairs Commission. We'll take public testimony and then take up the one amendment we have on that. And if it is the will of the committee, then we'll also move that bill out as well. Representative Ortiz, I'd like to recognize him as also being here. And so first up, we have House Bill 81, transfer of vote title upon a death. Again, no amendments for this bill. We'll review the fiscal notes. There's one fiscal note from the Department of Administration to review. Online, we have Mr. Jeff Schmitz, Director of Motor Vehicles. Mr. Schmitz, if you're online, if you could put yourself on the record and walk us through the fiscal notes.
For the record, my name is Jeffrey Schmitz. I'm the Director of Alaska DMV. With respect to the fiscal note, Mr. Chair, committee members, I was just informed that the fiscal note that DMV submitted was changed by the committee. As I'm reviewing it, just looking at it here just a moment ago, I see that it's now listed as an indeterminate or zero fiscal note. That is a change from what DMV submitted. And so I can't speak to the reasons why the committee changed the fiscal note. I'd be happy to address any other questions you may have about this.
Mr. Schmitz, I'm getting a head nod from staff that we may not have changed the fiscal note. The fiscal note that I see before us, which is OMB component number 2348, does have total operating expenditures of $75,000, GF program DGF, which I'm guessing was probably the original fiscal note. We'll take a quick at ease, but if that is the case, that we do not have an indeterminate fiscal note, we'll go ahead and have you walk us through what we have in our packet. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 8:39 a.m. Mr. Schmitz, the fiscal note that you may be looking at, I think, is the one of the early original fiscal notes that was generated at the House Transportation Finance Committee level, or the House Transportation level. And in that fiscal note is no longer in play. It's and so the one that is effective is OMB component 2348. And so if is that, does that make sense, Mr. Schmitz?
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much. Yeah, it makes sense. I just received some information that was changed just before the meeting, so I apologize for that. I don't doubt what you've just said is the case, and I'd be happy to walk through what we believe to be the fiscal note.
Great. Thank you very much. If you could please proceed.
Thank you very much. Again, Mr. Chair, committee members, the DMV put a $75,000 fiscal note onto this bill. It was for programming that would be needed to change our information system to be able to do what the bill is asking us to do, specifically with the titles. This $75,000 programming note was our programming fee we were informed that was from our OIT area, our Office of Information Technology, that's what it would take to program the provisions of this bill. And it was simply a pass-through item that was placed onto the fiscal note. DMV did not put any other items onto the note financially with respect to this bill in terms of what we would need to do to make it work on our end. But the $75,000 that's on there is specifically for the programming that we needed to do the bill provisions.
Great. Thank you very much. I might have maybe the bill sponsor as well as the staff, Representative Rauscher and Mr. McKee, come to the table. I just want to make sure that what I stated about the fiscal note is correct, and to your understanding that indeterminate fiscal note is no longer in play. Is that correct? If you could put yourself on the record.
May I ask a question of the guy who's online?
Sure.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher. Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes, you are correct. The Transportation Committee put an indeterminate fiscal note on that, but when it got to Finance Committee, it was switched back to the $75,000.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is for the person that's online there. Doesn't this action have to be taken anyway? At some point, there's going to be a transfer of the title. If someone passes away, that title transfer is already happening. I guess I'm just wondering why there would be additional funds needed if this is just, it's not an additional step, it's just a prescribed step.
Mr. Schmitz.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the question. This is not something that happens automatically. It's not an automatic thing when somebody dies that the DMV or the individuals that are involved knows who it should be transferred to. Sometimes the vehicle can be subject to probate. It has a variety of other features that could direct the path of ultimate ownership in different directions, which I'm certain is the reason why the committee sponsors, the bill sponsors, are writing this bill to sort of clarify what would happen on the death. And so the programming involved would simply be to change all of the fields that would be needed to display this properly on a title in such a way that it would be clear as to what the intent of the owners were upon death. And all of those provisions would need to be programmed so that it's effectively written properly on a title so that these issues are not going to be prevalent moving forward. That is my understanding of the reason of the bill.
Follow up?
Yes, so I see here that it would take 600 programming hours. Is that 10 weeks is 40 hours a week, that's 400 hours. So, I mean, we're talking about a 15-week programming to do that work.
We'll go to Mr. Schmitz and then the bill sponsor. Mr. Schmitz.
Mr. Chair, committee members, that is correct. That's the information that we were provided by our Office of Information Technology. It's a complicated item. It's particularly with the ownership fields. It's multi-layered. It's we have to make sure that it gets correct. We're talking about the ownership name on a title, and so it does need to be correct. It has to be tested. It has to be regression tested. I'm not the technical expert for OIT, but that's the information that we were provided by them. It could take a team of them a while to work on it. I don't know exactly what the process is, if it's one person for 15 weeks, if it's two people for half that time, if it's a small team for a short period of time. Nonetheless, that's the estimate that we received, and that's why it went into the fiscal note.
So I guess one follow-up?
Follow-up?
Yeah, I don't want to slow anything up, but it seems to me, with some background in programming, that seems to be a lot of programming to do a title transfer.
I just want to note, we also have Leslie Isaacs, the ASD person for DOA in the room. I don't know if that would be helpful, but just want to make sure folks know. Representative Rauscher, did you have any comments on this?
It's Representative Rauscher, District 29, for the record. It's hard for me to understand how that length of time would take to make a change like this. That's my only comment that I can make. I don't understand it, but I see other bills with probably just as much of a change, and I don't understand why they get a zero, but that's just me.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions of the committee on the fiscal notes? Okay, seeing none, it sounds like there's some questions on this, but I guess the true threshold of whether or not we're okay with the fiscal note is put it to a vote, I suppose. And Representative Edgman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm playing a little bit of catch up here. So we're disputing the fiscal note? Is that what's before the committee?
Asking questions of the fiscal note, I suppose, Representative Edgman.
So we're just information gathering that on the fiscal notes. I'm just not quite sure what we're doing, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we're just reviewing it. Sounds like there's some questions, and I guess from my standpoint, the question is, if we move forward with the bill, the department feels they need this money. It may be that they end up not using all of the money. But if they do indeed need the money, like they believe they do, then it would be my thinking that, they'll end up coming back for a supplemental. And I just like to, if this is the amount that we think we need at this point, then I'm comfortable, going forth with this fiscal note. So anyway, Representative Benjamin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I would add to that. I want to see the bill move, and I think we have the support to move it. The fiscal note is not probably what the bill sponsor wants to see. I gather that, but it is, in the scheme of things, fairly nominal. And so I think we should go for the greater good, move the bill.
Great. Senator Johnson?
And I want to see the bill move, too. I mean, I don't want to get bogged down on the $75,000 fiscal note. However, sometimes when we see the fiscal notes come before us, this bill, not specifically, but I guess I'll have to spend some time looking into how we get to some of the numbers.
So, thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know anything about computer programming, and so when a wizard guy behind the scene tells me this is what it takes to make it go, I have to defer to their expertise, and I'm very supportive of the bill, having just gone through a probate with an estate with my sister, and understand that things that should be very simple and straightforward sometimes aren't. And I know that we're talking about both boat titles and vehicle titles, so I am thinking that it may add a layer of complexity. And then I want to remind us that DMV is one of the few places in the state budget that it generates millions of dollars to the general fund that laps every year. And that $75,000, my understanding is a fiscal note, is that's the maximum it should be, and maybe it doesn't cost them that much. But I think for the good policy of its creation, I'm going to defer to OIT saying that's what it costs, and remind us that DMV generates millions for the general fund. And for the good of public policy, I think we should move the bill.
Great, thank you. And maybe to add on to what you said, Representative Hannon, I would also add that this is a one-time dollar amount. It's not a recurring yearly operations amount. It would just be to set up the system this one time. So are there any further questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, I would entertain a motion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move House Bill 81. Make sure it's 81. Okay. 81-33-LS-036-A from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, seeing no objection, House Bill 81, which is 33-LS-0366-A, moves from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. So with that, we'll just take a brief at ease. Thank you very much, Representative Rauscher. Mr. McKee. Okay, House Finance back on record at 8:52 a.m. Next up, we have House Bill 148. That is the Alaska Performance Scholarship and Eligibility Bill. There were no amendments for this bill also. So we will be reviewing the fiscal notes. Looks like there are four fiscal notes. And first, we've got Executive Director Sana Ifrid with the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education here to walk us through three of the fiscal notes. So with that, Director Ifrid, if you could put yourself on the record. And just FYI, we also have Carrie Thomas, Director of Program Operations. So with that, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yeah, good morning. Chair Foster and members of the committee, thank you so much for having me here today. For the record, my name is Sana Ifrid. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. And for House Bill 148, the Alaska Commission has three fiscal notes. The first one I will go over is the appropriation for student financial aid programs, allocation Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards, OMB component number 2990. For this bill, the commission has estimated, and I can go over that, the text, but first I'll just go over the numbers. This fiscal note is funded for the actual performance scholarship awards. It is all money that is passed through as grants on the grants and benefits line, and it is funded through the Higher Education Investment Fund. For FY25, you'll see a fiscal note of $2,264,000. FY26, $2,404,200. For 27, $2,545.7 million. FY28, $2,688.7 million. FY29, $2,833.1 million. and FY 2030, $2,978.9. For this bill, it amends the qualification criteria of an Alaska Performance Scholarship applicant by adding an option for and expanding career and technical education to the academic curriculum. It inserts a definition for career cluster, removes the minimum score on a college entrance or standardized examination requirement for eligibility, and adds language to allow for a grade point average or GPA or a minimum college entrance examination to qualify instead of requiring both. It adds a requirement for school districts to notify students in their junior year of their progress towards earning APS eligibility, and it requires districts to inform students in 9th and 10th grade about the performance scholarship. It increases the annual award amounts, which you can see below in the table, and I will read over in just a minute for those increases. It provides an additional 2 years for students to use the scholarship after high school graduation, expanding from 6 to 8 years, and it allows eligible award recipients to qualify for an increased award level while enrolled at a qualified post-secondary institution, which is a step-up provision. So under the next section of the fiscal note, you can see the performance scholarship award amounts are being increased by level one from a current amount of $4,755 annually to an award of $7,000. For level two, from $3,566 to an award amount of $5,250, and level three, $2,378 to a proposed award amount of $3,500. And below that, the table of the increases in awards, you can see the requirements for the GPA or the minimum scores on the college entrance exam. In order to come up with an estimate for this fiscal note, we considered all the changes in the eligibility requirements that the legislation could result in, and a possible increase in new students who would be eligible for the scholarship. Additionally, taking into consideration the increase in the award amounts could increase the current appropriation amount. Therefore, the calculation estimate for the APS fiscal note award amount is based on the assumptions. We started with the current FY23, which is our most recent finished class that we know the numbers for. That was our base. We applied the increased scholarship amounts included in HB 148 to the FY23 numbers. We projected a 2% increase in student usage for FY25 due to expanded eligibility criteria. And then for the following years, projected a 1% increase in number of students per year. I'm happy to answer questions or to provide any other clarification.
Great, thank you. So we are on OMB component number 2990. We've got a question, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, good morning, Ms. Eford. The as you know, the Higher Education Investment Fund, we had to recapitalize with close to $400 million. We had to pass a law calling it a separate fund so it couldn't be swept away. So the legislature, many of us have shown a real commitment to it. My question is, and I'm not deeply worried about this, but I wanted something on the record. Will the draw be sustainable?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson. As I stated at the beginning, this is really an estimate, and what we wanted to put forward was a really a good faith, transparent number for what this could look like. However, currently the appropriation for the APS award is $11,750,000. for this past year, we used and actually awarded less than $8 million of those funds. Let me also give you some other information that may be helpful. The Commission on Post-Secondary, we do not manage the investment of the fund. That, of course, is revenue, so I don't want to speak on their behalf for the sustainability, but to provide some background information. For FY24, the statute says for the calculation for how the money should be distributed from the fund is the Department of Revenue provides a 7% calculation of the balance and then provides that to the commission to distribute in 2/3 for the scholar APS scholarships and 1/3 for the Alaska Education Grants. And in FY24, the dollar amount, the 7% to be allocated, was $26.6 million with $17.7 million for the APS, but only 11.75 was appropriated and only 8 or a little under was actually used. And the education, the Alaska Education Grant had an available $8.8 million to use. However, only $5.8 million was appropriated and used for that. So what I'm trying to show is there, we have not, up to this point, used the 7% total calculation that is available to use under statute for the Higher Education Investment Fund. However, I can't predict what investments will be, what interest will accrue, losses. Those would be questions for the Department of Revenue. But we feel comfortably that there would be, I would say, 5 years or so before we might be looking at a concern with this. I'm not putting that on the record to say I'm the investment expert here, but up to this point, again, I can also provide to the committee, which I believe you each have on our latest performance scholarship report, how the numbers have been reducing in the use of the performance scholarship, and we are at less than half of what the high number was at this point in time. So I really think it's going to take probably 4 to 5 years to really get all of the new changes, which are going to be so beneficial for opening the door for other students in the pipeline and getting them in this program. I would say at some point, possibly in the future, there may be a question or there may be funds needed to recapitalize or put an infusion into the Higher Education Investment Fund. But I really feel this is a tool in our statutes right now that will make a difference for our workforce.
Great, thank you. Also, I'd just like to recognize we've got Representative Stutes in the audience. And then also, this bill is a House Education Committee bill, and so I wanted to also recognize we've got co-chair of that committee, Representative Ruffridge, here, as well as Representative Story. I thought I saw Representative Himshute earlier, who's also on the committee, but so I just wanted to mention that if there are any comments that were wanting to be made from the committee, I'd certainly welcome that. So with that, I don't know if we have any more questions on this fiscal note. Looks like no. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I have a question, and it may not be related to fiscal, but it is something that you read in describing the fiscal note, and that is one of the additions is notifying students, I believe, in their junior year and maybe also in their sophomore year. My question was whether or not that notification goes home. Do the parents see it as well, or is it just to the students?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, I'm sorry, I can't pull that quickly. I'm not
That's
sure
okay.
if it's actually identified in the bill that says
okay.
students. I believe it's students, okay. but I would have to double check that information.
Okay. Thank you. It's not pertinent to my saying yes to this bill. Mind you, I'm very happy to support it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Okay, next fiscal note, please.
Next fiscal note is, again, Department of Education Early Development, the Appropriation Student Financial Aid Programs, and this allocation is for the Alaska Education Grant Program, OMB component number 3340. This is also funded through the Higher Education Investment Fund. For FY25, $1,165.2. FY26, $1,235.3. FY27, $1,306.1. FY28, $1,377.5. FY29, $1,449.7. And FY30, $1,522.6. You may wonder why the Alaska Education Grant would have a fiscal note, but based on current statute, the Alaska Education Grant will increase as a result of the projected Alaska Performance Scholarship increase in this bill. AS 1443-915, Section C, of the total amount available annually to the Commission for payment of grants under this statute and for payment of scholarships, one-third of the combined amount in the accounts established in those sections shall be available solely for payment of grants awarded under AS 1443. The Commission shall annually allocate to all qualified applicants for scholarships awarded two-thirds, this is the performance scholarship statute, two-thirds of the combined amount in the accounts. If an insufficient number of qualified applicants are awarded grants or scholarships or both, the Commissioner shall redeposit the remaining funds into the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. And I'm sorry, I think I skipped something here. I'm having difficulty with my glasses this morning. But two-thirds, as I shared earlier, two-thirds is appropriated and set aside for use of the Alaska Performance Scholarship, and by statute, one-third for the Alaska Education Grant. Therefore, if the appropriation increases for the Performance Scholarship, the appropriation would also increase for the Alaska Education Grant proportionately. And that's what that fiscal note is showing for the committee.
Thank you. Any questions on this fiscal notes? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the next fiscal notes.
And the fiscal note, the third fiscal note for the commission is, again, education and early development, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and the allocation is program administration and operations, OMB component 2738. Under this is the administrative allocation for staffing that would actually implement this program. And these are one-time costs, again, requested from the Higher Education Investment Fund, $31,200 for personal services, $16,000 in the services category, for a total of $47,200 for administrative cost of this program, of the changes in the bill for the Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grant. As we shared before, all the eligibility qualification changes in these two programs would require, to implement the changes in the bill, we would have to have some additional one-time funding for personnel costs to implement these changes, including working with a contractor to implement the changes into the Alaska Student Aid Portal, which we manage and actually is the platform used to receive information from the Department of Education for eligibility of students, and then disbursement to the institutions and their certification of those students. There's also $6,000 for regulation changes that will need to be made on the post-secondary side for these programs, the administration of those, and the $10,000, which would cost to update the platform, the Alaska Student Aid Portal, to implement those changes for a contractor.
Okay, any questions on the third fiscal note? I see no questions. So with that, thank you very much, Director Eifert. Would also like to recognize we do have another member of the House Education Committee, Representative Hemshoot, here. Again, this bill is a House Education bill. So with that, I believe next up we have Deb Riddle. And here we'll review the student and school achievement fiscal note with the Department of Education Early Development. Ms. Riddle, if you could put yourself on the record, looks like you're the operations manager for innovation and education excellence. So with that, if you could walk us through the single fiscal note that you have.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Deborah Riddle, and I'm the operations manager for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, and I'm here to talk about the fiscal note for HB 148 for the student and school achievement section and with the component number of 2796. This fiscal note is a one-time fiscal note for $6,000 for updating the regulations on the K-12 side of the Alaska Performance Scholarship, which would include updating the curriculum options, providing information about the notification for students, as well as removing the testing qualifications that is outlined in the law. So it would just be a matter of getting our regulations updated so districts can have the guidance they need in order to work on the scholarship with students.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions on this fiscal note? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Riddle. So if there is no further comments from any of the bill sponsors, I'm not seeing any hands in the air. I would, if it is the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion to move this bill out of committee. And if it is so, then Representative Johnson.
I move House Bill 148-33-LS-0624/U from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, I see no objections. So with that, House Bill 148, which is 33-LS-0624/U, moves from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease. If folks could please sign the sheets at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 9:15 a.m. And next up we have House Bill 193, which is Internet for Schools. The committee does have two amendments for this bill. And so first up, first amendment is Representative Stapp. Representative Stapp, if you'd like to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move Amendment 1.
No object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. So I'm going to do my best to articulate some of the issues that I think are structural within the program that are probably not the intent of the sponsor, right? So the reason I'm offering this amendment is because inside your packet, I looked through the Universal Services Program, all the E-rate billings in the state per eligible school, and then I compared them to the actual bag awards that some of those school districts received. And I noticed a couple of things in my head that didn't add up. So number one, when I looked at all-in costs of school districts on internet, after a massive federal subsidy and after a massive state subsidy, I found rural schools that were really small districts that still had to pay upwards of $50,000 for internet. When we had public testimony on this bill, school districts that were receiving E-rate awards and even bag awards were talking about systems for internet that they were buying that aren't qualifying for a bag award in spite of the subsidies. So my thought was with this amendment, what I'm attempting to do, and we can certainly bring up some of the folks in the department to talk about the mechanics of this because it is a relatively complicated program. When I look at a school district like the Bristol Bay Borough School District, right, the total monthly billing for that school district from their service provider is over $100,000 a month, okay? They get a 90% discount from the federal government on the E-rate that's applied to their bill, and they get $91,000 from the state for bag. But after all of those subsidies, the school district still paid almost $50,000 for internet last year. And when I talk to some of the folks who work in the district and the business manager, they're looking at buying a different service provider. Because with all of those subsidies, their costs are still astronomical to find internet, and they have options that work better for them, in their own opinion, that are less money. But the problem with how we structure the bag is they can't receive any state money for doing that. So what my amendment is intentioning to do is say, hey, if we're going to give you $91,000 in a bag award, and you want to move to a service provider that you think meets your needs better, and you only have to pay $40,000, we should probably be able to give you the $40,000 instead, right? Because you get the product that you want, and we actually save money. So that's the intent of the amendment, and with the permission of the chair, I mean, there are some issues with it that I think that we should probably discuss as well, if I can bring up the folks from the...
Mr. Chairman, can I intervene here?
Sure. Representative Edgman?
Yes. I feel like we're relitigating this bill, okay? And as a sponsor of the bill, or at least the individual who brought it in front of the committee, the intent of the bill is to sort of build off of a well-established program that's been through the legislature on a couple of different iterations that involves a very complex sort of application process at the school district level. Also has to meet a very, like, several times over more complex regulatory process through the federal end of things, the Universal Services Program. And then on top of that, in between all of that, there is the Board of Education and regulatory process. So if we want to relitigate this bill and bring all of those components before the committee and spend several more hearings on the bill, then I'm going to be opposed to that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, I guess, to the members of the Finance Committee and Co-Chair. And so it's not my intent to relitigate the bill. I said the only reason I'm offering the amendment, and again, my intent is to withdraw the amendment because I don't think it achieves the goal I stated, because there are technical aspects, as Co-Chair mentioned, that are quite frankly kind of beyond my understanding. But I believe that the intent of the program in 2014, when it was enacted, was to help rural schools get higher speed internet as a disparity issue to be an equalizer. That's what I believe the intent of the program. My belief in that is because I went back and I listened to the meetings. I listened to the meetings in 2019. So I'm not out to try to structurally change the program. My only concern, especially when it comes to the fiscal aspect of the BAG award, is we are actually talking about two separate things that are not dependent on each other. There are plenty of schools that have E-rate awards that do not get BAG money. So our state grant is not dependent upon the E-rate awards. It's dependent upon the E-rate awards because our design is in this concept of megabytes per second that they're awarded, right? So there is no mechanism within this program that takes into account an internet service provider that doesn't maintain a constant speed, i.e. 25 Mbps up to 100 Mbps. So if you have a ISP that offers internet at 100 Mbps and it'll tick over to 105 Mbps sometimes because satellite internet is not a constant, that school district can no longer receive a BAG award, right? And I don't honestly know how to fix that, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't. I tried all weekend. I just don't have it up here. I do know that there's a problem and that if we want to have folks have the best internet that they want as a district, at some point we should probably look at how we better deliver the goal. And again, my intent is to try to deliver a better outcome that the district wants. Leave that decision up to them. That actually would cost the state and the district less money. Like, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about how do we look at a fixed cost that they already pay and lower that fixed cost through this program. So that's just the intent of the amendment, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. So it sounds like we've got two avenues. One is you had mentioned you might withdraw. The other is we could explore this a little further, and you had mentioned that some of the folks from DEED were here. Is there anybody specifically that you're thinking about wanting to bring up? And let's go back to Representative Edgeman and then Representative Galvin.
I want to respect Representative Stapp's ability to, investigate the bill as fully as sees fit, of course. But I want to remind the committee, we have a hard deadline in front of us. We have another bill that's the process that has to go through a conference committee. If that were to sort of supersede this legislation, time is of the essence. And I will say this as well, Mr. Chairman and to fellow committee members, we had virtually every school district in this building, it seems like, the last couple of weeks. I had 100 conversations. Virtually every one of those conversations at some point or another touched on this issue. None of these concerns, and I'm not saying, Representative Stapp, your concerns are not legitimate, but none of them were brought to me to that extent. I think the recognition is that 100 megabytes per second is the best we can do, but in a perfect world, it'd be a lot higher. But there's a very sort of handsome fiscal note attached to this as the way it is now. So there is sort of an imperfect nature of this as it was when it got introduced in 2014, amended in 2020, and here we are in 2024, upping it, hoping that these billions of dollars of federal money that are coming through primarily the BEAD program can sort of help offset or make this bill not applicable so we don't have to put UGF money into supporting the broadband assistance grant program. So this, I feel like, the discussion obviously is worthy, but we could spend a lot of time going through the minutiae on this bill at many different levels and still not be satisfied. But it is what it is. It helps a lot of schools. Maybe it doesn't perfectly fit the scope of every school, but the business managers I've talked to, Representative Stapp in my district, and the superintendents tell me it's good enough. Let's get on with it. We have a deadline. We're going to miss the deadline, and then we're going to lose it the entire year.
Representative Edgeman, I would echo your comments in the sense that this is a program that we've had for some time now, and I guess, you hear that statement all the time around here, which is don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. But I would also maybe like to just give a chance for departments to maybe, elaborate for a moment on what Representative Stapp is saying, which is it sounds like there is no easy fix. And I suspect that they're probably going to say the same thing. And I'd be willing to, give them the opportunity to hear that. Is there anybody in particular that you were from the department that you're looking at?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, rather. With permission, I'd like to call up Laura with the folks from DEED or anyone else from the folks of DEED that are here as well to kind of walk through this kind of structural thing.
Yeah, so we've got Ms. Laurel Shoup, and also if you could put yourself, both of you could put yourself on the record.
Morning, Chairs. For the record, my name is Laurel Shoup. I'm the Legislative Liaison and Special Assistant to the Commissioner.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Morrison. I'm the Director of Finance and Support Services for the Department of Education.
Great. Thank you. Any comments on Representative Stepp's amendments? Is there an easy fix? Is there not an easy fix?
Thank you for the questions, Chair Foster, Representative Stepp. Under this amendment, I think the intent is for schools to have alternatives to the federally approved internet service providers currently. So a little bit of background about the school bag program. The E-Rate program has been long established by the federal government. Representative Stepp was explaining a little bit of that process. The internet service providers must register with the E-Rate program in order to be considered through their application process. The application process for school districts to apply for the E-Rate program, they have a very specific set of forms that they must use that go out to those registered internet service providers. So in this amendment, Representative Stepp, and I believe your intention is for the internet service providers who are not registered under the federal services program to be eligible for school bag funding.
Representative Stepp?
Yeah, through the chair to the folks of the department. Correct. So it doesn't necessarily feel to me that it should be a requirement that they should be registered. I think there are definitely benefits that they should be registered, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. My intent of the amendment is to give a school district the ability to say, hey, in the event that we find a service provider that we think better fits our school, and it would cost us less money than we are currently paying, and it would be less than what we would pay in lieu of bag, then we should just give that district that lesser amount of money to cover their entirety of their costs, which is the second part of the amendment, so long as it is less than what we would have given them under the bag grant. So that's my only intent, and I'm not sure how to craft that properly, but with the permission of the chair, maybe you could speak to the issue of the hard cap of the MPS and why that doesn't work with different service providers.
Through the chair, Representative Stepp, thank you for your question. I'd like to call on our Faye Tanner, who is the E-Rate program manager, and she's very well-versed in those technical aspects.
Ms. Tanner, if you could put yourself on the record and answer the question, or we could repeat it if needed.
For the record, my name is Faye Tanner. I am the program coordinator here at Department of Education. Through the chair, may I ask the question to be repeated one more time?
Through the chair. So my question is really simple. If we go up to 100 MPS as eligible bag award, if I have an ISP that at some point in that service goes between 100 and 200 or back down to 80, am I eligible to use bag money because that MPS per second is not a consistent number?
Through the chair, thank you very much for the question. As the bag is right now in the statute and the regulation, any speed that goes above 100 megabit per second would not be qualified. And that's one of the issues that several school districts are having with using Starlink for with the speed that goes above 100 megabit per second. At the current time, it's 25. So it goes well above 25 megabits.
Okay. And with the permission of the chair, I did actually talk to a bunch of those business managers in school districts about their upcoming bids. Some of them are planning on changing their bids, and I think that's up to them. And with all that, that's probably all I have to say on this until we get the fiscal note, Mr. Co-Chair. So with that, I withdraw my amendment.
Okay. The amendment is withdrawn. So with that, thank you very much, Ms. Morrison, Ms. Shoup. So with that, that takes us to the second amendment. We only have two amendments for this bill. And so, Representative Colon.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to withdraw my amendment.
Okay. Amendment number two has also been withdrawn. And we did review the fiscal notes last week. Certainly willing to revisit that if needed. And I'm not seeing any need for that. So with that, I would entertain a motion, if it is the will of the committee, to move the bill. Representative Johnson?
I move House Bill 193-LS0817 /A from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal notes and give legislative legal permission to make technical and conforming changes.
Okay, thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 193, which is 33-LS0817 /A, moves from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note and gives legislative legal permission to make technical and conforming changes. So we'll take a brief at ease, just allow folks to sign the House Committee report, and then we'll come back for our last bill today, and that bill will be House Bill 155, which is Alaskan Military Affairs Commission. So brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 9:33 a.m. And last up, we have House Bill 155, which is Alaskan Military Affairs Commission. We did receive one amendment, and but before we get to that, I would like to take us to public testimony. Anyone watching online, if you'd like to submit public testimony, you can do so by sending an email to the following email address, and that is house.finance@akleg.gov. And so with that, I will open up public testimony on House Bill 155, Alaska Military Affairs Commission. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? And I don't believe we've got anyone online. So with that, we will close public testimony on HB 155. And again, just to repeat that email address, if you'd like to submit written testimony, you can do so by sending an email to house.finance@akleg.gov. So as I mentioned, we do have one amendment, and that is by Representative Hannon. Representative Hannon, if you'd like to move your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment 1.
Okay, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment on page 3, lines 10 through 12, current section 5, that's adds a second clause and just gives some structure and guidance to the kinds of issues that I think would help with assisting communities in preparing and developing that relationships with the armed forces, making sure that we've addressed issues like schools that are available, education and training, cultural recreational assets, housing and energy affordability. And I think those are issues that the military looks at. And since our attempt is to make sure that we've got a structure in which we are planning and communicating, I just wanted to add those in because those are things that many local governments say are the issues that arise.
Okay, thank you, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to the committee, and of course, stressing Representative Hannon. I like this amendment. I really appreciate that the representative took some time to craft a way of some guiding principles behind the aspect of our My AMAC bill. And I appreciate her thoughtful input, and I support this amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions on the amendments? Seeing none, I will remove my objection to amendment number one. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number one to House Bill 155 has been adopted. And this one also, we did review the fiscal note, had one fiscal note. We reviewed that last week. Is there any discussion, any need for more discussion on the fiscal note? I'm not seeing any. So with that, I would entertain a bill, if it is the will of the committee, to move this bill out of committee. And with that, Representative Johnson.
I move House Bill 155-33-LS0701-D from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached or forthcoming fiscal notes and give legislative legal permission to make technical and conforming changes.
Great. Thank you very much. Seeing no objection, House Bill 155, which is 33-LS0701-D.
Can I interrupt you? Can we take an at ease, please?
Brief at ease. House Finance back on record. Seeing no objection, House Bill 155, which is 33-LS0701-D, as amended, moves from the House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We also give legislative legal permission to make technical and conforming changes. So with that is everything that we had on the docket for today. And if there is nothing else to come for the committee, we'll see folks on the floor. Our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is today at 1:30 p.m. We'll hear the market forecast by Cowan and Associates, I believe. Well, that's not the permanent fund. That's just the market forecast. Or is it? So with that, House Finance will be adjourned at 9:38 a.m. Thank you.